This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. I'm your host, Arum. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Let's start the show. This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm excited to bring you today's guest, Mr. Jide Ahimika. Jide is an IT consultant. He's the founder of HBD. That's the Happy Birthday app, and he's also a co-founder at NoirBnB. Jide, I've given a very brief introduction of some of the work you're doing, but I was wondering if you could take time to let the bandits get to know you a little bit better.
Absolutely. Hello, bandits. How are you? My name is Jide, and I'm an entrepreneur. I'm based here in Washington, D.C., but I'm Nigerian. I do a lot of my work in Nigeria, actually. And I have two startups that I'm currently working with that I'm really proud of. As you just mentioned, one is HBD, the Happy Birthday app. That's available in the iOS store right now. And that's an app that allows users to track their birthdays, wish their friends happy birthdays, send videos, and send gifts. We have vendor partners with HBD. So the really cool thing is, you know, you can go on Macy's or Nordstrom or Walmart's or Amazon, right through our app, find, you know, a gift that you really like, right through our app, add it to your wish list, right through our app. And if any of your friends who are on the HBD app happen to see this and want to buy it from you on the wish list, they can do so by the click of a button, and it comes right to your door. Then the other app I'm a part of, and this is not necessarily an app, but it's a venture. It's called NoirBnB. And this really came about due to a lot of the unfortunateness that happens with the very popular Airbnb for people of color who try to book rooms or who try to host rooms and some of the, hostile environment that they deal with. And what NoirBnB is, we're curating the Black travel experience for a very, very large group of people, which is people of color around the world who do like to travel and share experiences and share their culture. So at NoirBnB, we'll give you a platform for places where, you know, you'll be accepted and for, you know, connecting people within the community. So you have a safe space to talk and to share ideas and to possibly meet up. And you know, it also allows you, just like Airbnb, to book a room. Either through a room sharing a service, or, you know, you can list your room if you have extra space or if you have an extra house. So, it was really exciting stuff.
Nice. And so for HBD, where would you say the inspiration for that came? Because it's combining a lot of really different ideas into one thing, and I think it's combining them in a way that doesn't seem too clustered.
Yeah. So the idea actually came from, my co-founder, who I went to school with, so it was an old friend of mine, Nigerian as well, and he reached out to me, and he said, hey, you know, I have this great idea. Wouldn't it be great if on your birthday, you know, instead of cluttering through, like, your Facebooks, you know, someone could just send you a video and wish you happy birthday? And boom, an idea was born, and we worked on it and kind of went on it from there. And the thing that, you know, that made it a lot of sense and made people, you know, keep looking at it and made it keep growing is the fact that, you know, right now I ask everyone, you know, if it's your birthday, how do you get those well wishes? How do people reach out to you and wish you happy birthday? And everyone says, well, you know, my really, really close friends and family may give me a text. So I'll probably get a couple of those. You know, maybe some work colleagues or something like that will send an email, and then I'll have a few hundred messages on Facebook from people that I don't really talk to, you know? And everyone just kind of has the same story. HBD is, you know, we're calling ourselves the birthday app. So it's a one-stop shop for everything birthday related. So you can find out when your friends' birthdays are. You don't have to, like, float through your Facebook calendars and try to figure out, you know, what's going on. So you can see all your upcoming birthdays. You can find out what your friends are trying to get. And you don't have to worry about calling them and getting their address or hey, do you want this? And I can get this for you, because it has right there on the wish list. And coming soon in the future, we'll also have an idea where, you know, your friend can list that how they're celebrating their birthday. So not only can you see when their birthday is, but if you have 2-3 birthdays coming up this week, you can say, oh, you know, Joe's birthday is on Friday and he's celebrating here. And, you know, Anna's birthday is on Saturday and she's celebrating here. So it's definitely something that, you know, we're really excited about, and I'm really happy to be a part of that team.
Okay, nice. And one thing that you just mentioned that I really liked is you said you asked people before you started the businesses, you ask people what they would want. And I think that's something that entrepreneurs often skip. They feel like they know what the best thing is for the customer. And sometimes they bypass that and maybe end up building something that the customer actually doesn't want at all. So I actually remember, now that I'm thinking about it, there was a survey that was floating around in the ether. And I'm now thinking that was probably for Airbnb. I think this was maybe about 6 months ago. I got a survey that I took. But in terms of finding out what people want, oftentimes I've experienced it, other people experience it too, is that they're a little bit shy or a little bit embarrassed to sort of put themselves out there in front of people that they know and even people that they don't know, in fear of embarrassment. So what is your advice on scrapping that? Because, I mean, I definitely think that you have to be embarrassed. You have to put yourself out there for embarrassment to be a successful entrepreneur. But how can someone sort of take that leap?
Well, so you hit it right on the head, right? Is that if you're an entrepreneur and you're developing something, so whether it's a product or it's a service or whatever it is, you're solving a problem. So, you know, you can't really solve the problem unless you have a full grasp of what the problem is, even if you're within the group that you're trying to solve the problem for, right? So even if you say, you know, me personally, I would love if something did this, 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 and the other, it doesn't hurt to go out and do things like a survey. So that survey you saw probably most likely was for Airbnb, actually. That was one of the very earliest things that we did to try to understand where we were to grow the business. But it's, again, understand, okay, how similar are your problems to other people's? Is there a thread of similarity? Is it the exact same problem? Or is it just, you know, part of a larger, you know, group of issues, you know? So, I guess my advice to people that are a little bit, you know, cautious about asking people, you know, hey, I'm working on this thing and all like that is, you know, don't be, you know, I think, and you'll be surprised. A lot of the response you get if you tell people, hey, I'm working on something, can you fill this out, is a positive one. Most people, you know, most people like to see that people are working on things, and most people like to feel like they're a part of something, especially at the beginning. So, you know, most people say, hey, yeah, I'll definitely fill out a survey where you're taking my needs into account. I mean, let's be honest. Everyone loves complaining about, you know, what's going wrong in their lives. So, you know, like I don't think people have a problem filling out a survey and saying, okay, this is what I don't like about this. This is what I don't like about this. This is what I wish was different.
Okay. And so we've talked a little bit about HBD, but can you just talk about what some of the aspirations for Airbnb are? You mentioned a little bit, but if you can get a little bit more detailed about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Airbnb really kind of grew following the unfortunateness, like I said, late last year. And their hashtag actually started that went viral, Airbnb While Black. And, you know, what you're finding is, I mean, Airbnb is also a revenue model for a lot of people who want to rent out their houses, who have, you know, maybe some sort of vacation home or an extra room in their house or something like that and want to rent it out. So you can anticipate that, you know, those people would be kind of picky about the kind of person that they allow to rent their house. So, you know, Airbnb, that's why Airbnb made profile photos and people kind of explain a little bit about their background. And and when you contact the host, you tell them exactly what you want to stay for. But I mean, this is the world that we live in. Discrimination found its way in there. And what you found was a lot of people of color were being denied housing or being told that rooms weren't available. Yet when, you know, people, white people and Western people were going in there, they found that, you know, the rooms were available, you know, for the same room, for the same dates. So, you know, again, this is a free market society. And the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur is that, you know, when you see a gap, when you see a problem, you can start a business to solve it. And that's where Airbnb steps in. So it's not just a platform that allows you to book a room. Like I said, it's not just a platform that allows you to, you know, find a place to stay in a city you are. But it's a platform that really connects the Black travel community. The Black travel community, not only in the States, but just around the globe, around the diaspora, is huge. I mean, and right now we're seeing a lot of carriers, low-cost carriers, go into Addis Ababa and Nairobi and Lagos and that kind of places. And, you know, I think tourism in Africa is kind of exploding a little bit like that. So that's kind of where, you know, Airbnb will step in. Because it's the entire noir travel experience. So not only for, you know, in terms of culture, you know, you go to a different city, like, you know, as a Black person, you know, where are the Black people at in the city in terms of, like, you know, culturally, like, you know, what do they do? Where do they congregate? You know, what are things to do for them? You know, and Airbnb plans to handle all of those issues. So we see Noir B&B as the first and only step as a black person traveling. So, I mean, not only would you, like, you know, write down your travel experiences that you have, but you'll communicate with other folks that are doing that. We'll find a way to match people up. For example, if you say you want to take a trip to Lagos, we'll find a way to match you up with someone who's willing to host you in Lagos, someone else who's willing to take a trip and get all you guys together. You know, it's just a really, it's a gap that we found in a space that we found is not really occupied right now. And as everyone is kind of just doing our thing on our own. And then that's what we're hoping to step up and solve.
Nice. And have you launched, or if not, when are you launching?
So Noir B&B is not launched right now. You can go to the website, noirbnb.com. You can enter your email, and we'll definitely email you when we're launching. And we're aiming for the end of this summer. So more than likely at the beginning of August.
Okay, nice. And so just wondering, have you raised any money for any of the startups that you're working on?
Yeah, so HBD is a little bit further along. Like I said, HBD was actually founded in 2014, and we launched last year in 2015. So we've had funding for that. You know, we've gone kind of through the investment cycle, you know, or reaching out and doing our Series A. Noir B&B, I guess we're kind of just starting that process now, especially as we're building and doing the build for the rollout. So, you know, if you know any investors, let us know. But we've definitely been in conversations, with Noir B&B. And to be honest, it's been really, really good. I mean, everyone seems to be really, really excited about the idea. Everyone knows that the business model works since, you know, Airbnb is such a popular platform. So it's been going really, really well for us.
Nice. And in a few words, can you talk about how you go about raising money and also how much of the business you should give up?
So there's no hard and fast rule. You know, everyone just kind of, you know, do what works for you. I guess ideally what they say is, especially as you go through the initial funding round, you probably want to cap it at 20%. You don't want to give away too much of your company. You don't want to give away more than that. Friends and family, of course, if you know, that's how you're getting a start, they're going to want a piece of the action too. You know, maybe you can do some things where you can have some sort of convertible notes and, you know, pay them money back and have them understand that, you know, they'll have a piece of the company, you know, as you scale and grow. But the main thing is, as you do scale and grow, is that, you know, you have enough of the company left so that the new investors or the big money investors coming in, you know, have a piece of the pie that they can invest in. And, you know, you get the money that you need to really take your enterprise where you want it to go.
Great. That's really good advice. And so I want to talk a little bit about the makeup of your teams. What would you say the expertise is that others have? I mean, I know yours is probably more of the technical side, but what do you usually look for in co-founders?
So this is actually a good question for Noir B&B, because I wasn't involved in the founding, the initial like idea and founding of Noir B&B. So they reached out to me when my two wonderful co-founders, Steph and Rania, when they realized that, you know, this was actually something they wanted to pursue, and this is something they wanted to go about building and launching. The first thing that caught my attention to them was just their passion for it, and I think at the end of the day, that's the one thing, because, you know, starting a company, whether it's a mobile startup, whether it's a restaurant, anything that you start up, even if you're going to produce something, the first thing is passion, because there are going to be a lot of long nights, there are going to be a lot of failures, especially at the beginning. So, you know, the folks you're working with aren't passionate about what they're doing. If they don't have true belief, I guess is the word I should use, in what they're doing, then it's going to fail. Because, you know, you hear it all the time, and it is so true. Ideas are cheap. Good ideas are even cheaper. The one thing that is that actually stands out are people who are willing to put in the work. So that's I think, more than anything else, even with HBD, my co-founders, Mark and Chi, I love the fact that everyone I work with, you know, wants to put it into work, because that's the one thing that immediately I think turns me off on an opportunity or on a venture is someone reaches out to me and I realize that, you know, they're not willing to put in the work. They're looking for a quick fix. They're looking for a quick come up. Yeah.
Interesting. And this is great. I mean, you're sort of spitting the same rhetoric that a lot of the other entrepreneurs say. One is passion, and that passion is definitely something that I can see and I can hear with you, and I'm sure the bandits can hear that as well. And that leads perfectly into this question: is what fires you up in the morning? What's your morning routine, and why is that routine so important to you?
All right. So two separate questions. What fires me up is solving problems. Like, I truly, truly enjoy solving problems.
since I was a child, I've enjoyed, you know, solving, you know, this is an issue. No one, like, you know, no one can seem to get around it. How we do it, and you know, the mental task of figuring that out. That's just always been something that I think I've liked. So I've always been drawn to that. But as far as like my morning routine, in the morning, I mean, that's really kind of the only time you have in the day, right? So in the morning, if I'm on the treadmill doing a workout, I really try to, like, you know, scroll through, not only the morning news, but again, just try to get a sense of what's going on in the world, what's going on in my world, in social media, and what's going on in, you know, in the world I'm trying to inhabit, which is, you know, like right now, if I'm looking at NoirBnB, I'm looking into the Black travel space. So I'm very heavily looking into, events or things of that nature that happen with Black travel. So different conferences. I'm looking at major destinations. I'm you know, reading New York Times articles on the latest destination spots in Africa, for example, and that kind of thing. So I love that about my routine because, you know, almost always something like catches my eye and kind of like drives, you know, like just a point of curiosity that kind of drives me for the rest of the day or maybe a couple days or in rare cases, maybe a couple weeks even, where I'm like, you know what? What's going on there? Maybe there's something deeper there. What's going on there? What's going on there? Maybe there's something deeper there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just the constant thirst for knowledge and to kind of, you know, get a better understanding of what's going on and a better understanding of the problems and the potential problems and how I can solve them.
Okay. Nice, nice. And so the passion, we've already determined the passion is there. The passion is something that you have right now. But another part of being an entrepreneur is being able to generate income. So can you share some ways that you bring money in for yourself?
Sure. So if you have a startup, it's a much, much harder proposition, right? Especially if you have a startup that doesn't immediately provide value, which will immediately provide revenue.
Yeah.
In those cases, I tell my young entrepreneurs and people like that, hey, if you're really strapped for cash, especially based, you know, in the States and stuff, drive Uber or something while you know, you're trying to work out what it is that you're doing and get some money that way. But I'm, you know, there's essentially I kind of gave the answer to the question there. You just really want to establish value, you know? So if, for example, if you call yourself a consultant, and I think you see that a lot, who are you consulting for? What are you consulting on? Like, what value are you bringing as a consultant? Why should someone pay you money to solve or to look into an issue as compared to someone else or as compared to just doing it themselves? A lot of people call themselves strategists. It's the same, you know, basic concept. Who are you strategizing for? What is your strategy? What's your basic outlook on strategy? Like, what are you trying to achieve? So, you know, the main thing is that if you can create value in whatever way it is, you can create, you know, monetary gain. That and that's really a good rule of thumb. Like, if someone finds value in what it is that you're doing, they're willing to pay you for it. So even if and we're finding now in some of the unicorns, the social media unicorns, even if that value is something like Snapchat, where basically you're just taking clicks and eyeballs and people, and you know that people are going back to your product again and again and again and again, you'll find the value there. Someone will pay you for that because, you know, it's just really, really hard to get clicks and eyeballs, for example, you know? So, that's my advice. You know, create some value and it will drive, you know, it'll drive profit.
And I like that. So I'm just thinking, I've come across a lot of people in Nigeria, in Ghana, Kenya, across Africa, who have told me they want to start their consultancies and they're looking for advice. So if someone comes to you very broadly like that, what would you give them if you had maybe just a couple of minutes to talk to them?
I would tell them the first thing is presentation. I mean, you know, you want to, so if you're coming from, especially if you're coming from Africa and you want to, if you're there and you want to consult and you want to do things like that, presentation and start locally. Starting locally, reach out to your local businesses, see where the gaps are, see where you can fill the gaps, you know, see where the trends are. You know, maybe don't try to hit a home run immediately. You know, not everyone's going to be Deloitte just, you know, because when you started your smaller consulting firms. But if you can show that, you know, you're good at this and that's the kind of job you do. So for example, you know, you start a consulting business and you find out that a local bakery, in your town is having some problems because they're having like logistical issues, with delivery or logistical issues getting in, like some supplies or something like that. Solve that problem, you know? Like, you know, show a way, use your expertise to solve that problem in a way that nobody can. You can bring in all the international consultants you want and all like things like that that you want, but nobody knows Abuja better than the boy that lives in Abuja. You know what I mean? So yeah. Solve that problem. Like, you know, figure out, okay, this is why this thing is happening. This is why this thing is not going the way you want it. This is what you're trying to do. This is how I can help. And once you do that, I mean, at that point, you're really just growing your reputation and building your business, which is really one and the same.
I like that. That's very good and actionable advice. Look for where there are gaps and solve for those gaps. Don't necessarily try to go for the home run. Taking those opportunities that are right in front of you helps you build experience. And experience is something that you can't, that can't be supplemented any other way. You just have to do, you have to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about experience is that, I guess the funny thing about life is that the more you get of it, you know, the more people are willing to give you other things, you know? So if you solve the baker's problem and then you go and you solve a restaurateur's problem and then you go and you solve, you know, some other man's problem, next thing you know, people will be calling you to solve their problems, you know? So yeah, absolutely.
Nice, nice. And so we're going to shift gears a little bit. Being an entrepreneur, there are highs and lows. So I want to go to a very specific low. I want you to share one of the lowest points that you've experienced as an entrepreneur.
Just one. Oh man. Wow. Okay. Okay. So I'll give you a good one with Happy Birthday Digital. So we had the idea, and you know, we're all ready to go and we had an investor lined up. And I mean, this is really when our idea was just on paper. And at this point, I mean, we're thinking, wow, it's really easy to be an entrepreneur. You know, you come up with this great idea, you write a couple emails, and all of a sudden the guy wants to cut your check for $500,000. That's amazing. Like, how easy can that be? You know,
yeah.
We had the meeting, we thought it was a slam dunk, and you know, it just, the communication started to get less and less, you know, we couldn't really get in touch with his people as easily as we could. And finally word just came back that, you know, he's not really interested anymore. You know, another business interest came up of his, so he's going to back out. And like, I mean, at this point, you know, we kind of had plans for the money, you know, we've been trying to look to hire people and buy this and get that and sign up for that. And now it's like, oh wow, we don't have any type of money to launch the way we want to launch. Now we have to do a lot of growth hacking. Now we have to kind of like, you know, go back on some of the agreements that we'd signed and figure it out, okay, you know, which ones can we do without and which ones do we absolutely need. That was a really, really low point, I think, for us. And I think that also kind of like reflected in a lot of like stuff we did and stuff we tried to do in a lot of our growth hacking techniques. But it was a really, really good lesson learned for us as well. We got through it just the way you get through anything else. You know, we sat down as a team, came up with a plan and said, okay, maybe we don't have this, but you know, what are our strengths? What do we have? You know, let's not focus on what we don't have. Let's focus on what we do have and try to go from there. And, it's been a battle, but you know, nothing that's worth it comes easy. So it's been fun. If nothing else, it's been fun.
Wow. And I like that. It's sort of a recurring theme that I see with a lot of the entrepreneurs I interview is that their low points often stem from someone promising something and you're sort of green behind the ears when someone says they're going to do something. You sort of take them at their word, but you sort of wise up quickly as time goes on as an entrepreneur. But I like that you said you had to do a lot of growth hacking. That's not a term that I've heard on the podcast before, but it's something that I'm going to incorporate now is learn how to growth hack.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I can talk about it a little bit. I mean, it's a term that I've had to learn over the last year, you know? It's basically, for the people who may not know, I mean, growth hacking basically just means that you're building your business, you're marketing it, you're, you know, pushing your product, you're growing your product in a grassroots way. So you may not have all the money in the world, but you know, maybe you have a really, really funny Instagram account and you know, and you become really, really popular because people keep going, then you have a really great YouTube page and all of a sudden you've built a following of, you know, tens of thousands of people that now allows you a base to do certain things that you want to do without paying a huge marketing budget. That's just, you know, one example of growth hacking. But it's very important, especially in this landscape where I think, you know, we're realizing that there's a lot, you can spend a lot and waste a lot of money trying to get people to pay attention to you and pay attention to your product and market it. And with the world it is now, with social media it is the way it is now, with communication the way it is now, you know, the hard workers and the smart people, you know, you can figure out a way to do that without spending so much money. So, you know, you don't need, I mean, my father's generation, you know, he used to say, yeah, we needed this huge loan or this huge capital to build up the business. And nowadays, you boys just need hard work. So, you know, I take that to heart and you know, that's how I try to go about it.
Nice, nice, nice. And so switching gears a little bit, give it a more upbeat feel. What is one of the best moments that you, what's one of the best moments that you've experienced as an entrepreneur so far?
Oh, there's been tons. I mean, it's rewarding all the time. The best moment is probably the first time I signed a contract where someone said, oh, you know, I would, you know, please be my consultant here. I'll pay you for this project. And, you know, we agreed to terms and I signed the contract. The first time I did, it was probably the best moment because it was like, you know what, this is real, you know? And in a lot of ways, I still don't feel like what I do is real. You know, I still kind of feel like, you know, I'm still like this guy just trying to figure it out, just trying to, you know, put together a company and put together, like, you know, a plan. But I guess we all, you know, we're all figuring it out. Even the people that look like they have it the most together, we're all figuring it out together. So that was the first time that I was like, okay, I'm in the game, you know, and that was, I think, a very rewarding moment. And after that, it's just been, you know, high after high after high after high. I mean, you know, there's lows there, but again, like I said, if it's not hard, then it's probably not worth it. So, yeah, that was my answer.
Nice. And looking back, what do you think that it took to get to that point of signing that first contract?
Belief. Back to that word, right? It really just takes belief. I you know, and the funny thing is I talk to some young entrepreneurs, from my alma mater. I went to Temple University in, Philadelphia. And I talk to some young guys all the time, and, you know, a lot of them all say the same thing, and a lot of them have these great ideas. I remember I talked to a young man the other day, and, you know, he had this great, like, business plan where he was going to help, like, monetize a lot of musicians who were on things like SoundCloud and YouTube where they didn't make any money, and he was going to find a way to kind of, like, combine them together, and, you know, he figured if he had 10 or 12 musicians as a group, they will be stronger and can probably book shows as a group and they can do things as a group to make money. And I was like, you know, this is a great idea. And he's like, yeah, but you know, it's really difficult to get a move on it and no one takes you seriously. And, you know, I don't know. And he's like, you know, because, you know, there's professional like event planning firms that do this kind of thing. And I was just like, look, man, like if someone was doing what you wanted to do, they'd be doing it already, right? I mean, like, let's be honest, like, no one's coming out now and saying, oh, I have a great idea, let's do Facebook, because Facebook exists. But, you know, if you want to do something that, a gap that, you know, a problem that Facebook is not solving, just go for it, just go for it, just dive right in and just go for it, you know? I mean, you don't need, in 2016 especially, you don't need a ton of money, you don't need, you know, a ton of expertise in terms of, well, I have to figure out how to market this. I mean, you don't even need, like, a 60-year-old guy in a suit to look good for you, you know? Like, you can do it yourself. People are open to the ideas of the youth. I know, you know, for my brothers in Nigeria, I know that a lot of our discussion is, well, when will Nigeria be open for the youth? But people are open. No, people are. I mean, I'm in Nigeria all the time, and people really are open to the ideas of youth if it's a good idea and if you're willing to work and if you're willing to execute on it. So my whole thing is, you know, do not be discouraged. Do not be, you know, just don't be scared and don't think that it has to be perfect. You know, just go out and just do it. Just go out and do it and, you know, learn from your mistakes. Like, we all make mistakes. You know, my first ever business I tried failed miserably. I don't even know what it was I was trying to even do. It failed miserably. But you know what? I learned how to do business a little bit better. I learned how to send emails a little bit better. I learned that it's probably better to reach out to people at 7 a.m. as compared to 7 p.m., you know? So, you know, it's just, you always learn lessons. And please, use the time, especially if you're young. Use your time to your advantage. So the one advantage you do have as a young person is time.
Yeah. No, I really like that. And going back to that person who was trying to monetize artists, you know, I often tell people there are, you can find a million reasons not to do something, but as long as there's one reason that you really believe it'll work, the rest doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, belief, the word keeps coming around.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny because, so I was actually, I was trying to spring, you know, we're talking to an investor about Noir Airbnb, and he casually mentioned, he's like, yeah, you know, actually I was one of the people that Airbnb originally approached, and this is way back in like 2008 or something like that. And he's like, yeah, and I thought it was the dumbest idea in the world. I mean, these guys kind of said, oh yeah, you're going to open your house and someone's going to rent a room, and he was like, man, no one is doing that. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm not whatever. But, you know, those guys had belief in what it was that they were doing, you know. Just because one door is closed doesn't mean that they all have to close. Mm-hmm. So belief is really the thing. And that's why I tell people it's not going to be perfect. Like, no one, like, what Snapchat is today wasn't what Snapchat was when it launched. Mm-hmm. What Twitter is today is not what Twitter was when it launched. I mean, Twitter was just supposed to be a platform for developers and other IT folks to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Literally, that was it. That was the entire thing. And look what it is today now. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just believe in what it is that you're doing. And you know what? If something truly is untenable and there's, if there's really no future in what it is that you're doing, then fine. Cut your losses. Move on to the next thing. You know, don't wallow in it. Don't, you know, don't have pity on yourself. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're moving forward, man, you're beating the majority of your competition because a lot of people in this world just don't move.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of along these same lines, I'm just going to ask a very general question is when you look at Nigeria or maybe Nigeria and other African countries, what do you think it's going to take to get tech to really take off there and have a lot of people creating solutions for problems that we have? Because I asked because talking about Airbnb, it's definitely something I think that could have come out of Nigeria. Just thinking back to how many times we traveled across Nigeria and how many times we actually stayed in hotels. You know, this is something that's already in the culture. So I'm looking at Airbnb and saying, you know, we already do that in Nigeria. Why didn't that solution come from Nigeria? I mean, there are a host of reasons, but what do you think it's going to take to have these unicorns coming from Nigeria and other parts of Africa?
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to think is the education, you know, the main reason that unicorns come from, you know, the States or from San Francisco in particular is just that you have all these really, really smart people that move to San Francisco. They all live amongst each other. They work amongst each other. They talk amongst each other. So, you know, one idea begets another idea, which builds on another idea. And that's just kind of how it goes. Mm-hmm. And in Africa, it will be the same. It will be there shortly. I mean, Africa is already producing, some of its very first unicorns. So, you know, you kind of expect that will be in the future. And, let's be honest about it, like, technology is the one platform that Africa it will really, really do well in just because our infrastructure is not as ingrained as it is in some Western countries, and other things. So, to answer your question, I don't think it will take a lot. Like, I don't think it will necessarily require some sort of revolution. I think we're already going on that path already. I mean, people have smartphones, people have, you know, communication devices. People are young and people are hungry. I mean, those are all the ingredients you need right there to make something happen. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, you know, our economy, not just in Nigeria, but our economies in general, like, you know, they don't do us the best of favors when it comes to education, when it comes to social safety nets, mm-hmm. and the kind of things that, you know, you'd really require to step out and feel the confidence to step out and start your own thing. But, I think we're well on our way, and that's why I'm actually working really, really hard, because I would love to be part of the wave of young Africans that really, you know, takes us into the next movement.
I mean, I can definitely see that the way you're so passionate about it. That's another word that I'm going to add on to beliefs is passion. That's another thing that's a recurring theme throughout this podcast. But I just want to ask, how can you stay focused? You're working on two startups right now. Generally, we know that starting one is difficult enough as it is, and you need to sort of be very conscious of what you do with your time. So can you talk a little bit about how you're able to manage both?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing that I really, 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 really need is to stay organized. And the other thing that's great that I have great co-founders. So my role is a little bit different in both, which I think, you know, also kind of helps things along, and also since they're on different paths of the development cycle, that also kind of helps things along. But yeah, the main thing is just is you got to make sure that, you know, you got to keep your time as limited as it can be. You know, you have to make sure you keep on top of your schedule and keep on top of that. And the other thing is just transparency. So what I'm always, you know, cognizant of when I'm dealing with my teams is being very transparent of, you know, okay, this is a major goal that we're trying to accomplish for, you know, Project X. This is the time I'll devote towards that goal for Project X. and, you know, this is everything I have going on. So if a Project Y comes in, I have to say, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't take this on right now. You know, these are my deadlines and my milestones. I'm trying to reach for Project X. So that's really, I guess, the answer to your question, but it's a juggling act. I mean, but life in itself is a juggling act, but, you know, so time waits for no man, but I just try to make it work as best as I can just by staying organized, staying on top of things, and being transparent.
Nice. And so this next question is definitely for a friend of mine. As we're going through this, I just remembered you're sort of in the stage where you're starting a family. You're still in the early stages of starting a family. You have a wife, you have a child. And my friend was like, how do people do that? Because he's going through that phase right now. I'm not going to embarrass him and put his name out there. But he's just like, how, just listening to some of these people that you interview and they're starting businesses and also trying to raise a family, how do they go through that? What is the process like? He just wants a glimpse into that part of your personal life.
To be honest, I don't know. I have the best wife in the world. So that's really what it is. I think it comes down a lot to partner, because I know there are some people, like, you know, just within my circles growing up that, you know, had an entrepreneurial spirit, you know, were starting business, that kind of thing, and that kind of came to a halt and as they started their families and stuff like that. But, you know, me and my wife, you know, we've had conversations, and she's like, please do not let this hustle come to a halt. We can move on as a family. Like, you know, as we can share responsibilities, share duties as we need. You know, some sacrifices are going to have to be made, as we move forward. But yeah, please do not stop, you know, cause your success makes our family more successful, you know? So my thing is just have a good, long, deep conversation about priorities and expectations with your partner. Please do not underestimate children, because I have a 2-year-old right now, and let me tell you, this is the hardest job. You think it's hard having a startup? Oh no, it is hard having a 2-year-old. This is the hardest job in the world. So yeah, you know, don't underestimate that, but just enjoy it, you know, enjoy your time and have a plan and work itself out. So there's some long days, there's some 20-hour days in my life, I'm not gonna lie, but I enjoy it, you know?
Nice. And I think one of the things I'm noticing is that you don't necessarily have to have everything figured out. You mentioned that earlier in this podcast. And this is part of that sort of growth hacking and that life hacking that you have to continuously work on doing. You had a startup, probably threw a child into that mix, and you had to figure out, because both of them were things that you needed to have work. So you just sort of learn as you go.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, with that, we're going to enter the rapid fire round. So are you ready?
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. What would you say was initially stopping you from taking the step to become an entrepreneur?
Fear of failure.
And at what point did you stop looking at your business as a project and more as an actual business?
The first time I got money from it.
And what quality do you have that most contributes to your success as an entrepreneur?
I would say, I don't know exactly how to word this, but I would say I found that I'm really, really good at identifying problems and potential problems and trying to come up with solutions to stay ahead of the curve.
Nice. And what quality do you wish to improve on most?
Gosh, there's so many of them. You know, honestly, I wish I was a little bit more creative. I think just because of my background in finance and in tech, like, I tend to be, I'm not as creative. And that's what I love about my Noir B&B co-founders, by the way, that they're the two most creative people in the world. But yeah, that's not my strength. So I think that would be one thing I'd love to build on.
And what's the best advice you've ever received, and who is it from?
The best advice I ever received was from my uncle. I remember this because he's the one that first told me. I was in like middle school or something like that. And, I think like, I just, for whatever reason, I just kind of felt depressed. I just felt like I was falling behind the pack. You know, I just wasn't doing as well. And he's the one that told me, you know, just run your race. And he said, I'll never forget this. He's like, the thing you don't understand is that, yes, life is a marathon and not a sprint and all like that. But more often than not, if you just run your race and just keep running, eventually you'll realize you're the only person still running, because everyone else always stops.
Interesting. I like that. That's an interesting way to put perseverance into perspective.
Yeah.
And do you feel a sense of belonging where you are right now?
Yes, I do. I feel a sense of belonging, not only on a personal level with family and friends, but also in the tech community. I try to be very heavy in the black social tech community. I feel like I belong there. In the entrepreneurial community, I definitely feel like I belong. Just meeting other entrepreneurs, meeting people who are successful, I think it's a really, really, really good thing for aspiring entrepreneurs, because if you meet someone that's done what you're trying to do, you realize that, you know, they're not Superman. They're normal just like you. So, you know, you kind of, you know, weigh yourself there as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Nice. And what are you reading now?
Wow. These are heavy hitting questions. Okay. So, I'm really interested in transportation. And when I say transportation, I don't necessarily mean like, you know, just the, you know, Uber or like, you know, or ride sharing in that way. But I mean, transportation in the sense of like trying to like get people, or the fundamental aspect of trying to get the human body from like point A to point B, you know, like, trying to understand like what it is that motivates and drives people for transportation from like our very beginning of our origins till now. And I kind of think that, you know, there'll always be a space for that. And I kind of think that that will always kind of be the future. So, I picked up this book. It was called, Flexible Ride Sharing, New Opportunities and Service Concepts. And you know, the reason I got it, I'm sorry, New Opportunities and Service Concepts for Sustainable Mobility. And, you know, the reason I picked it up was because I was really interested in the ride sharing concept as a business model. Like, you know, is there a future there, or something that, you know, I can learn to, you know, start a business. But then just kind of reading it and just looking at, you know, we as people, how, you know, we view ourselves and how we live, like, you know, we tend to view transportation in a way that we don't view other things and other things that we do in life. So it's been very, very interesting to me just to kind of like look at it in that sense. And it's also given me a lot of good ideas, not just in like ride sharing or in terms of like, you know, oh, we can do an Uber, but for this, but like, I mean, an actual like, you know, thinking about how we think about solving problems, or how people even see problems. Like, you know, what do people in every society consider a problem? You know, that might even differ from society to society, but yet transportation always kind of seems to be at the center of it.
Interesting. And can you give the name of that book again?
Oh yeah, I'm so sorry. I just had it in front of me. Yeah. Flexible Ride Sharing, New Opportunities and Service Concepts for Social Mobility, for Sustainable Mobility.
Okay. Nice. And what is one internet resource or application that you couldn't live without? And let's exclude Google, Facebook, all of the big ones.
I just started using this this collaboration tool, Asana. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, since I started using Asana, I don't know how I got about life not using Asana. I can't recommend it enough. I mean, it's very similar to Trello, if you've used that before, but it allows you to have like large teams to do a lot of, you know, a lot of different things, not only with messaging, but tasking, due dates, assigning things. And that's kind of like my Bible. I tend to go to my Asana for the various projects that I have going, you know, all the time. Like, you know, even on my machine, I usually have a tab open to Asana as, you know, okay, what do I have to do next? What do I have coming up? You know, what have I done? You know, what am I expecting from someone else? So, yeah, I would say at this point in life, it would be really kind of hard to live without that.
Interesting. And that's spelled A-S-A-N-A?
A-S-A-N-A, yes.
All right. And so what do you do to unwind from a hectic schedule? I mean, sort of being a co-founder of two startups is very difficult. I'm sure you need a little bit of time to unwind. So what do you do?
I watch a lot of football. I would say that's right. In fact, today I was just doing a little bit of work, and I had, you know, the Euros are going on right now, and I had, you know, a game on behind me. I don't remember what the final score was. See, that's how bad I am. No, that's what happened. Italy won. Italy beat Sweden. That's usually what I do. You know, I've always really been into football since, I guess, like almost every young boy from when I was a child. And, you know, the minute that I realized that I couldn't play it or at a professional level or anything like that, you know, it just kind of just became a side passion of mine. And, you know, I love my team. So go Blues. I'm a Chelsea fan. So,
okay. I was about to criticize you, but since you said Chelsea, I let it slide. Yeah. Okay, and really to close out this rapid fire round, do you feel like you've made it yet?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, not even close.
And is there ever going to be that point where you think you would have made it?
I hope so. I mean, no, honestly, right? I mean, you sit there and talk to I mean, I would hope that at some point in life, like, you know, if you turn into, you know, one of these, you know, unicorn owners, or even if you're not even that, like, I would hope that there's something at the end of the journey, you know? Like, I mean, right now, I would say a lot of what I'm fueled about is I don't want to fail, and I want to succeed, and I want to succeed, and I want to succeed. And I would really hope that at some point I would be able to sit back and say, oh, yes, I succeeded, you know? So I truly, truly do hope that there is, you know, there's a point where I would feel like I made it.
Nice, nice. And I must say that's a unique answer that we haven't heard on the Knowledge Bandit so far.
Oh, well.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah. And so as we're cooling down, what is one book that you would recommend to the bandits?
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Well, all right, sure. So, it's kind of old. One of my favorites, and it's called Next, The Future Just Happened. And it's by, hold on, I can look this up. Michael Lewis. Yes. But the thing I loved about the book is because it's, when I said the book was old, like, I feel like it was made, I was in high school when it came out, so it was probably, like, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was, the book basically said that, you know, technology is the future, but because of how rapidly we're involving technology in the next, like, 15, 20 years, our society will completely be upside down. And I mean, I know that, you know, on the face of it, that kind of sounds extreme, and it kind of sounds, like, kind of crazy, but if you think about, for example, the Arab Spring that happened in 2010, 2011, you know, that was where technology really turned our society upside down. Like, no one really thought that all those, you know, Arab dictatorships would turn into essentially, you know, revolutionary places where, you know, the democracy was kind of trying to take a stronghold. So, you know, and we all know the role that Facebook and Twitter especially played into that, especially with, you know, social media and video and that kind of thing. Another good example is the elections in Nigeria last year. I remember for the election, I was in Washington, D.C. I was here, and I told people, I knew more about what was going on in the election than my parents did sitting in their house in Abuja. And when I say like that, I mean like, so, you know, people were just posting video immediately of them standing in line. Like, hey, I'm standing in line about the vote. Videos about how the process are going. And this is right on Twitter, like, you know, right on WhatsApp, pictures, videos, like, you know, tweets. So, I mean, technology really kind of has turned our society upside down. I mean, that really was the truth. But it's a great book. I think, you know, people should read it. And you know, really just try to see, not necessarily, you know, take it as a literal value, you know, not necessarily saying that technology will bring about, like, some sort of apocalypse, but really just see, like, you know, in the sense of what the world was like in reality 15 years ago as compared to what it is like today and what it can be like 15 years from today, you know. I really think I recommend that, definitely.
Nice, nice. And that's Next, The Future Just Happened.
Correct.
All right. And so who are your mentors, and what would you say the general value of mentorship is?
Mentorship is invaluable. And my mentors are anybody that I come across that has more knowledge than me in any subject that's willing to share that knowledge with me. So, I mean, I think I understand your question, because normally when people think of mentors, they think of these, like, deep bonding relationships that, like, you know, span years and really try to help you through the weeds and navigate. But, you know, mentorship can be something as simple as, you know, a lady who's really well versed in retail telling you, like, something as simple like, oh, well, you know, it's probably better to, you know, to do this instead of that. You know, just something really passing like that. And, you know, you can go to her for advice. So, I have a ton of mentors, and I won't be here anywhere near where I am without any of them. And they don't all necessarily, they weren't all necessarily entrepreneurs, or they didn't all necessarily work in technology. But, yeah, mentorship is invaluable. And that's the one thing I tell people, like, you know, please don't, you know, ever, you know, look past somebody. You know, I think, especially a lot of ambitious people have the tendency to do that, where they say, oh, you know, I'm trying to build the next Facebook, so I want a mentor like Mark Zuckerberg. And, you know, mentorship can come from anywhere, you know, so please don't look past anybody. You know, everyone has something that they can offer you. You know, we're all in this world together. So that's I guess, my one piece of advice, you know, when you're going out and seeking and soliciting opinions from folks, so, you know, you always have something to learn. And every day is learning.
Nice. And I just like to add, another form of mentorship is listening to the Knowledge Bandits podcast. So keep doing that.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Keep doing that.
Yeah. All right. And what advice would you give to some of the bandits who are listening, who are afraid to take a step that they know they should?
I guess the best advice I can give is just ask yourself, what's the worst that can happen, you know? I mean, this is always a difficult question, right? Because, like, sometimes the thing that's holding them back, like, so say, for example, you have a job, right? You have a full-time job. And to you to take that step means that you have to leave your job and leave your source of income, right? I mean, it's really easy to sit there and be like, oh, yeah, take a step, take the jump, you know? You never know, whatever. But maybe that's not the right move, you know? But I would say, more than anything else, like, don't be afraid to reach out to people. I found also a lot of what tends to happen is when people have really good ideas, or, you know, they're an entrepreneurial mind, they tend to keep their projects and their babies really, really close to their chest, you know? So they don't want to tell anyone the idea. They don't want to tell anyone what they're working on. They don't want to tell people, like, you know, the work that they've been putting in, for fear that, I don't know, maybe the person will judge them and think it's not enough, or maybe the person will try to steal that idea and do something else with it, or maybe the person would, you know, I don't know, in my case, I was really scared to tell people what I was doing because I,
like, you know, my advice is, like, don't worry about any of that. You know, just, if it's just a matter of just brainstorming, just, like, you know, letting people in on what it is you're trying to do, do that. A solid piece of advice, surround yourself with like-minded individuals. So, you know, if someone, you know, if you have a group of friends and you know they're serious people, even if they're not entrepreneurs, like, let's say you know someone that, you know, they work at a bank or something like that, and he's a serious guy, you know, surround yourself with people like that, talk to him, hey, what do you think about this idea? I know that, you know, this isn't necessarily something that you would think, but you're a critical thinker, you know, you see the big picture. What do you think? You know, what am I missing? If you were a consumer, what would you be looking for? So, you know, yeah, that would be my advice to people that, you know, are kind of wary of taking that first step is, you know, have a plan and go for it in a responsible and actionable way.
Okay, nice. And so, unfortunately, we're getting towards the end of the episode, but for those bandits who have been listening, who have just been particularly inspired by the work you're doing with NoirBnB and also the HBD app, how can they get in touch with you?
Okay, you know, bandits, if you're listening now, you can reach me on my private email, and that's jide.ehimika, which is ehimika, @gmail.com. Just reach out to me. Let me know that, you know, you heard me on Knowledge Bandits, and I will be more than happy to, you know, just, you know, reach back to you and just talk to you and answer any questions that you may have.
Nice, nice. Really appreciate that. And for those bandits that are listening who are signed up for our newsletter, you can feel free to wait for us to send that out to you when this episode airs. And so right as we leave, we end with the final question. I gave it to you a little bit earlier, and hopefully you've thought of it a little bit, not too much, but here goes. So you're tasked with building the greatest business the world has ever seen. You can bring on any two people, living or dead. With you taking the lead, who would you bring on and what would you do?
All right. So again, my thing is, and like I told you, I'm really, really big on this, on transportation and just looking at and connecting people. So what I want to do is something that connects people, and nothing connects people better than transportation. So, I guess the greatest, business ever known, maybe is one that we haven't had yet, is, you know, how you get people from point A to point B in the shortest amount of time possible. So, you know, depending on the era I'm in, that could be anywhere from building a shipping fleet, to building, you know, inventing some sort of car model, to inventing some sort of, you know, airplane now and in the future, who knows, SpaceX, you know? Mm. So in that vein, Elon Musk is definitely somebody that I would want on my team, because, the guy's just brilliant. I think, you know, he thinks about how to solve, he thinks of the big problems and thinks of, you know, solutions, to go about, you know, with the big problems. So that would definitely be, somebody that I think that I would want to do. And then I guess the other person, I would need someone who is a conqueror, someone who I guess pays attention to some of the smaller details and doesn't let things slip through the crack. So let's go ahead and we'll say Alexander the Great would be my other co-founder, and the three of us, we'll take over the world and build the next unicorn.
Wow. Oh, so there you have it. Alexander the Great, Elon Musk, and Jide taking the lead on that team. Nice. Well, Gita, thank you so much for being with the Knowledge Bandits today. I appreciate it a lot, and I'm sure the Bandits do as well.
Absolutely. I really thank you guys for all your time. This was great.
Great. This is the Knowledge Bandits podcast. We want to thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, or Stitcher. You can also follow Knowledge Bandits on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, Bandits, stay inspired.